Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I have one sitting right next to me. It is my go-to English translation, the English Standard Version. It's been out for, well, almost 20 years now. And I should say, in interest of full disclosure, the church body that I serve within as a pastor, the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, has used it in its liturgical materials for the most part unaltered. There have been some tweaks, 29 verses recently changed by the publishers of the English Standard Version, not the entire verse, but tweaks within those verses. One of them catches people's interest. Most of them may amount to housekeeping. Now they say the publishers, it's not going to change for the rest of your life. This is the English Standard Version, and it will not change. It is now written in stone. We're going to talk about some of those changes here on Issues Etc. On this Tuesday, September the 13th, Dr. Andrew Steinman joins us. He's professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University, Chicago, and author of the Concordia Commentaries on Daniel, Ezra and Nehemiah, and Proverbs, and a forthcoming Concordia Commentary on 1 Samuel. Dr. Steinman, welcome back.
Good to be back, Todd.
Is it unusual for publishers of English translations, or other translations for that matter, to kind of tweak or update the language in the ongoing publication of these works?
With modern translations, this is actually very common, and usually it's not publicized. A lot of these things are very minor things having to do with punctuation or corrections where the translators wanted one thing, but something else got into the text, and so they change it, and most people don't even notice it when it happens. But even with older translations, this went on from time to time. So the old King James Version, which was originally published in 1611, was updated several times, and the version we use, I think, comes from some date like 1723 or something like that, so 100 and some years later. And some of those changes were spelling changes, where English spelling had changed or standardized between 1611 and sometime in the 18th century. So, yeah, this is not uncommon at all. Sometimes it's more major things because the translators realize that the way they translated something wasn't communicating in the way that they had intended it to, and so they go back and try something a little different to try to do a better job of doing it for a contemporary audience.
And just in terms of kind of your theologian, your Bible scholar's thumbnail evaluation of the ESV as an English translation, where would you put it on the kind of the reliability scale, so to speak?
Well, I suppose it depends on what you mean by reliability. I'm not a big fan of it for people that don't know Greek and Hebrew, because although oftentimes you can match it up quite well if you know Greek and Hebrew, if you don't know Greek and Hebrew, I think it can be difficult and at times misleading. So if you mean reliability by an English reader who doesn't know any Greek and Hebrew, I'd put it on the fair to midland part of the scale. I don't think it's excellent for that reason. But if you're talking about a person who's using it in conjunction with Greek and Hebrew and knows some Greek and Hebrew, then it might be a little bit more reliable because they can see what's going on and why the English isn't always the best choice if you were just talking about English, but it is a good choice if you also have an eye on the Greek and Hebrew. So it's kind of a mixed bag, and it depends kind of what you mean by reliable and which audience you're talking about.
So for a matter of comparison, what would you put, working with that little definition you laid out there, what would you put as preferable? in terms of English translations?
Yeah, well, I'm not an impartial observer because I've worked on a couple translations, so I'm prejudiced towards the ones I've worked on. But they have problems, too. I will be honest, you know, no translation is perfect. Most recently, I've been on the Holman Christian Standard Bible Revision Committee working on that. And quite honestly, the original HCSB I'm not a fan of because it didn't get the sacramental passages very well. But eventually, when a revision comes out, that will be corrected. And actually, I like it not just because I worked on it, but because I think it communicates to English readers who were used to modern English. I think it communicates much better than many others on the market. So if and when that comes out, that, I think, will be a better translation to use. Years ago, I worked on the translation that's known as God's Word, and I think in many ways that's better, but I also think there are a number of places where it can fall short. It is, I think, better at English idiom than, say, ESV, but I think some places in translation it's probably not as good. So, I mean, and these are always balancing acts. When we're talking about Bible translation, it's always a balancing act that the translators are trying to do, and it's easy to fall off one side or the other, and especially depending on the philosophy that the translators are given to translate with this philosophy and with this in mind, it's going to skew it one way or another. The reason I'm not a big fan of ESV is simply because I think the translators were told to keep an eye on King James, and sometimes you see them doing King James things which probably aren't good in modern English, and they were told to pretty much follow Greek and Hebrew, which means that sometimes it reflects Greek or Hebrew word order, and English word order isn't like that. And so I think it's confusing and hard to read in some places because they could have easily picked up a prepositional phrase and put it in another place in the sentence, and it would be much better flowing English and wouldn't have changed the meaning one bit, and in fact would have made the meaning much more obvious to an English reader. So those are some of my critiques of it. On the other hand, you have to say it's very good at reflecting forms that are there in the Greek and Hebrew and trying to do so consistently so the reader can find connections across passages of Scripture. That's the strength of the ESV. And so, it has its good points and its bad points, and there it's a balancing act whenever we're talking about Bible translation.
Speaking of prepositions, and in this case also a conjunction, one of the verses that caught people's attention in the latest revision of the ESV is Genesis 3:16, which had read in the ESV this way. And this is in the context of God speaking to Eve while he is kind of passing out the curses, so to speak, immediately after their fall into sin there in Genesis chapter 3. God says, "Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." That has been changed in the latest revision to, "Your desire shall be contrary to your husband, but he shall rule over you." Without a degree in biblical Hebrew, can you explain it to us?
Yeah, well, this passage has to be considered in conjunction with one that's in the next chapter of Genesis, and that is God's statement to Abel, and they changed that one too. It's there, it's sin's desire or whatever will is for you, and you must rule over it, or something like that, to kind of paraphrase it. And so what they're trying to, I think, do is be consistent so that you can see a tie between this passage and the passage in Genesis 4, where the language is nearly identical. And they want you to see that. And very clearly in Genesis 4, the desire of sin for Cain is something that's negative. And so they're trying to bring that negative connotation back into Genesis 3. I read that, and I think, well, they're kind of trying to bring out the idea in Genesis 3 that you know, the woman will have this desire for her husband, but it's not just a desire for him. it may be a desire that also is somewhat detrimental to the relationship, and the corrective for that is, but he will rule over you. And so that's what they're trying to bring out. But when I read the change they made in Genesis 4, and I don't have it right in front of me, I said to myself, that doesn't communicate anything at all in English. So they changed both passages to make them match. But now I'm worried about what they've said in Genesis 4 meaning anything to an English reader who has no idea what's going on in the Hebrews, just reading it in English. I think they're going to scratch their head and go, what does that mean in Genesis 4? So I think in attempting to solve a problem, they may have introduced another one, but that's the life of a translator. I've been there. I know how that works.
We'll talk about this more on the other side of the break with Dr. Andrew Steinman, in particular that Genesis 3:16 passage. What is the Hebrew attempting to communicate, and how does the translator take prepositions without verbs and somehow make it sound sensible in English? It's perfectly sensible in the original language. There's nothing deficient in the original language. It's just that the two, that old language, the original language, and the one that we speak today, don't always match up one for one. What's the best way of translating it? We'll answer that question after this. Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Theology for blue collar, white collar, and clerical collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky. And St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Andrew Steinman is our guest. We're talking about those revisions made to the English Standard Version, in particular the one that is made, actually two that were made there in Genesis 3 and 4. Dr. Steinman, part of the issue here is that Hebrew is pretty sparse in the way it expresses things, and it's pretty contextual. That is, a preposition can mean one thing in one context and something different but not dissimilar in another context, and so can words like and but. That's the way we translate them here, isn't it?
Yeah, and problems are compounded when you have very common prepositions in any language going to another language. And so if you have a very common preposition in Hebrew, it can have a lot of different connotations depending on context. And therefore, you know, you have to make choices. And as a translator, you know, sometimes you agonize over, well, this is a common preposition, but what's the proper expression of that in English? And we have the same thing in English. If you think of the preposition of, which is very common, it has, I don't know how many uses in English. You can hide a lot of meaning in the preposition of. And so you have preposition problems like that. But here the problem is they're using English prepositions to try to get at a relationship between two nouns. And is the relation, what's the relationship between the desire and the husband there, those two nouns? Is it desire for a husband? But in what sense do you desire your husband? And they're trying to bring kind of the desire has negative consequences for the relationship. Part of the problem is this word is translated desire only occurs three times in the Old Testament, and even in later Hebrew occurs fairly sparsely. And it definitely has something to do with desiring, but exactly in what sense and with what connotations and how it differs from other Hebrew words for desire is a matter of debate, because it only occurs in a few contexts and usually use context to help you narrow these things down. When you don't have a lot of context, all of a sudden, you've got a lot of problems in figuring out exactly how to bring that into English accurately. And so they're really kind of struggling, even though it looks more like they're struggling with the prepositions here, they're actually struggling with this noun for desire and exactly what sense of desire it is. And they want it to match with Genesis 4, because there's very clearly play between Genesis 4 and Genesis 3. And so their motives are the highest motives in making this change. I'm not sure that they got it right, but then I'm not sure I could do any better, to be honest with you.
Well, okay, so they're operating with a principle here. They're seeing a connection between Genesis 3:16 and Genesis 4:7. That's a literary connection there. They're seeing that and they're recognizing that to be the case. And they're trying to say, how do the two work together? And then how do we translate these passages so that they both work and say what they're supposed to say? The basic idea in the curse with Eve is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Steinman, is God is saying, in essence, you are going to desire to usurp his position, but good luck doing that. Is that essentially what God is saying to Eve?
Well, that's one theory of what God is saying, but again, we don't know enough about this word. That's the theory they're working on. This word occurs here and occurs in Genesis 4, and then it occurs in the Song of Songs, where the woman says and rejoices in that her husband or her husband-to-be desires her. Now, is that a desire to dominate, or is it? Because that's a much more loving context, and it's definitely not a negative idea in Song of Songs. So is this word always negative? Is it negative only in Genesis? Well, with only two occurrences in Genesis and only three occurrences in the Bible, that's the theory they're operating on, that it's negative in Genesis, but probably not in Song of Songs. But we just don't know for sure. So they've made a kind of an interpretive decision about this word, and they're trying to express that interpretive decision in the way they translate.
I've read several critiques of the change that the ESV editors have made on this verse. And one of them says, look, you can do a lot of things with this preposition toward, to,
right,
but you can't do contrary to. That's a new one. What is your evaluation of that critique?
Yeah, I think that preposition probably does not carry that meaning. And their defense is going to be, but the noun before it does carry that meaning and colors the way the preposition is going to be used. So they have a comeback for that. And I can clearly see what they're trying to do. You can't invest the preposition with that. That is true. The question is the combination of this noun plus that preposition give you that? And that is a maybe, but you know, it's not always clear that that's exactly what it is. So I think it may be that way, but it's not necessarily that way, and especially given the context of its use in Song of Songs, it doesn't seem to be that way. So it's just anybody's guess. It's a viable theory, but there's no way to prove it I know of, because we just don't have enough examples from Hebrew usage to prove one theory over another.
With about 30 seconds here, if I go out and buy this final cut of the ESV Bible translation, in a basic sense, can I trust that it is a good, solid English translation that I can use on a day-to-day basis? About 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think you can trust it's as good as the previous version. And, you know, they've only made a few tweaks. A few of the tweaks have to do with consistency, so they have changed a few words here or there so that they consistently translate the same words the same way, so you can see ties across passages. So, you know, most of the changes you probably won't even notice unless you're laying the old one beside the new one as you're working. And there's only a few of them anyway. In a book the size of the Bible, it's almost like you won't miss a teaspoon of salt if you dump it into the sea. It's not going to make any difference. and so I think that's what we have here. It's going to be as reliable as the original. And for those who like the original, this will be just as useful.
What can you tell us about your forthcoming Concordia commentary on 1 Samuel? About 30 seconds here.
Well, I can tell you that it's part of a two-volume set, because I worked on 2 Samuel 2, and I try to emphasize, where possible, how 2 Samuel works into the message of the gospel, and especially the passages in 1 Samuel that point forward to the Messiah that other commentaries often downplay or overlook. So there aren't a lot of them in 1 Samuel, but there are a couple notable ones that ought to be seen as pointing towards Christ, and I try to bring that out. I also try to help the reader see some of the implications that are there in the text that are often not brought out by a lot of commentaries or that are passed over. I spent a lot of time talking about issues of text and translation in Samuel, and it includes my translation of the book, as well as a lot of textual notes explaining those decisions. So those are kind of the things that pop into my mind when I think about what I've done in that commentary.
Folks, you can find out more about the forthcoming Concordia commentary on 1 Samuel and Dr. Steinman's Concordia commentaries on Ezra and Nehemiah, Daniel, and Proverbs under the Listen on Demand page at issuesztc.org, or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Andrew Steinman is professor of theology and Hebrew at Concordia University Chicago and author of the Concordia commentaries on Daniel, Ezra, and Nehemiah, Proverbs, and the forthcoming commentary on 1 Samuel. Dr. Steinman, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're welcome, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to get our weekly update on the November elections from journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway. I imagine we'll be talking about Hillary Clinton's health a little bit. We'll also discuss the lifestyle left's war on Christians with Andrew Walker. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. I'll talk with you tomorrow on Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.